Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, everybody, welcome back after a layoff to another episode of One of These Years. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Colton Pouncey. We were off last week. That's probably my fault. I was at the Senior Bowl. I had my microphone, Colton, but I did not account for the fact that those practices last all day. And they're a long day. And also, like, I stayed at, like, I don't know. I had to drive. I just picked the wrong location. I was, like, a 20-minute drive longer than I wanted to be. Okay. So it was just a pain in the ass. In any event, we're back this week. Sorry about all that.
More to talk about. More to talk about.
And yeah, that's the other thing too. There wasn't much going on last week, but there is a little bit more. There was, but there was less clarity. Now we have a little bit more. So in any event, Colton, how are we doing? How are things since we last left off?
Good. Yeah, it's been a minute, but glad to be back. We got some coaching updates. We'll get your insight from the Senior Bowl, and we'll get rolling.
Yeah, a lot to probably recap or talk about, and part of the reason why we decided to hold off last week was that there was still a lot up in the air in terms of the Lions coaches. I guess we'll start with Aaron Glenn, Colton. That's what we were talking about before we started on here. Cardinals' job has been filled, he's out of that. It's been filled? Am I missing this?
It hasn't been filled yet. There's okay, like three finalists, out. Apparently, and he's out of
there. He's out on the Cardinals' job. Who are the finalists, by the way? Do you know? Do we even know? Man. It's not AG. Like, okay, so it's not AG.
Well, I know it's not AG.
Yeah. So it's not him. He's out on that one. And the only one left that he's technically still involved with, I suppose, would be the Colts. And as we were saying before we started recording here, nobody knows what the hell Jim Irsay is doing. my theory on that from the start was like Chris Ballard was going to interview every qualified person in the NFL he could think of, which I think he kind of has.
Like,
You know, and then just throw the whole list at Irsay and be like, look at all of these people. Do not hire Jeff Saturday. And so I feel like that now, that's like a 50,000-foot aerial view of the situation. I don't know the internals. Obviously, we follow Zach Kiefer here as close as we can at The Athletic. And I think Zach is trying to keep it as close to the middle as he can and saying that, like, it's probably presumptuous that people just assume it's going to Jeff Saturday, but also, like, he doesn't quite... I don't think anybody really knows where that's going, right? So, I guess that's where it's at. Am I missing anything with AG here, Colton? Where's the reset on him as things sit? How many interviews in total has he done in this round? Would we say?
Yeah. So the Cardinals were interested, and then the Colts were interested. The Cardinals dropped out with their list of three. I think that includes the Bengals DC.
Okay.
Luana Romo.
Yeah.
And then I think Brian Callahan, the Bengals offensive coordinator. I think he's in there.
Both Bengals coaches, yeah. Okay.
Actually, no, he's been eliminated. Sorry, Mike Kafka.
I like him.
He's in there. Yep. So they got a couple guys that they're interested in. And so AG apparently was informed that he was not a finalist for that.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's still not, and this is no discredit to AG. You know, When you're around football and you know these guys and he's been in this game for a long time, you're going to get interviews for jobs, even if like the numbers don't really back that. Like,
right, exactly.
Their defense hasn't finished above 30th or whatever in total offense the last couple of years. So I understand how on the outside, on the surface, it might not seem like he's ready for a job like this. But at the same time, like, guys in the NFL respect him.
Oh, my God.
He's going to – I know he's just going to knock – I know he's been killing all these interviews. I don't think that's a matter of it. It's just, you know, I think the Lions get more success if he comes back. They add defensively. Their defense goes from 30th to even 15th. I think he'll get a lot more looks next year. But the fact that he's already gotten two serious looks, multiple interviews with the Cardinals, made it to what seems like one of the final rounds with the Colts, but who knows what's going on there.
Right.
They have
17
rounds. but the fact that he's gotten this far, I mean, it speaks to how people view him in this league. And again, he might not get it this time around just because the Colts, it seems like Irsay is just going through this whole circus just to wind up with Saturday at the end. I mean, that's our
fear
from the outside, but
yeah,
that'd also be absolutely hilarious if it happens. I'm kind of hoping it does at this point. The fact that he's gotten that far kind of speaks to just, again, how he's viewed around the league. And I do think if he has one more year of success with Detroit, with the Lions, he's going to get a lot more of these looks and might not be around by this time next year.
Yeah, I think that it's inevitable almost. It almost feels like that he's going to get a head coaching job sooner than later, for all the reasons you said, Colton. And I think the thing that – and I think he's gotten – he's a head coach. I mean, let's just be clear. Okay, that's what he is. Aaron Glenn is going to be a head football coach in the NFL before too long. Everybody knows that. Yes, it's the full package of Aaron Glenn. And that's what you meant. You noted it, that everybody respects him. And there's not going to be an interview that he walks into that he doesn't, that he doesn't kill. I think sometimes he gets worried that and people around him maybe get worried that maybe he doesn't care, but people around him get worried that that the lack of success maybe is of stats, the lack of where they rank or whatever would hurt him. And I just always tell them that people that pay attention, that really pay attention, and there's a lot more of those out there than we realize and than we give credit to. They know Aaron Glenn, and it's not just the assistant coaching work he's done with the Saints or whatever. They remember him as a player. AG was a personnel guy at one point before he started coaching. He was a talent evaluator. So there's so much that goes into him. And I think that, Hard Knocks did favors for him in that it showed maybe some people that weren't familiar or remembered that he was coaching. Maybe people that remembered he was a player, right? Oh, yeah, he's a coach now. Maybe that helps. But like, really, if you're paying attention at all, you see the leadership skills. You see his ability to relate to players. And I think really you see his ability to draw out whatever's in there. And it doesn't always work. Doesn't always come out or we see it. But like my argument always has been like if a guy's got it, he gets it out. And we talk a lot about Jeff Okuda. Maybe he doesn't have it. If Aaron Glenn can't get it out of you, maybe you don't have it. And I think that smart football people see that with him. And so when we get a lot of these questions throughout the year of like, well, his defense sucks. The other part of that would be that I would say this. The hardest job in football right now, outside of being a head coach, in the coaching part anyway, is a defensive coordinator. It's the hardest thing there is. There's not even a close second. It's the hardest job. Everything is designed for you to fail. Like the game is designed for points to be scored, for things to be easier for offenses, for quarterbacks to be hit less, for receivers to be grabbed less, touched less. It's a hard job. It's the hardest job in football, frankly. So that's why guys like that, to Colton's point, get looks and will continue to get looks. And I think that you said it, a little more success, and maybe that's what he needs to get over the top. But frankly, I don't even know if that's what it is. They could have a similar year, and I think it's just a matter of like he needs to find the right fit and probably the right owner to be like, okay, you've done this for a couple years now. That's what I felt like last year that held him back with the Saints. It still doesn't make sense to me that he didn't get that job. I'm still a little confused that he didn't, but like maybe it was like you haven't been around long enough. I don't know. But yeah, to your point, I think it's a matter of time, right? Like it just doesn't seem like it's going to be that long. I don't know about the Colts, so I don't know about this year, but like maybe I don't know if he'll be here two more years. That'd be surprising.
Honestly, if I'm him, I don't even know if I like obviously you want to be head coach, but I don't know if Indy's like.
I like Chris Ballard. Man. That's a tough one. Yeah. I like Ballard and I like the front office, but Irsay's lost his mind is what it seems like. So
he really had. I knew that when we were at, I'll tell you this. We were
You were at the joint practices
in Indy. This man shows up wearing the most luxurious tuxedo. I don't even know what he was wearing.
In 80-degree weather.
This, golf cart in 85-degree weather, handing out $100 bills to fans just so they would cheer for him. I'm like, bro, it doesn't have to be like this. I'm telling you.
We should have known then. We should have known then that it was headed nowhere. But in any event, AG, he's still a Lion for now. If he were to go, Colton, last year we talked a lot about, the panic there. And I think it would be a sizable, they're in a better place as a team in general to be able to withstand something like that. But it would be it would hurt. It would be a sizable gap. And we were talking earlier, I don't think that there would be an internal promotion here if Aaron left. I really don't. I think it would be external, and I don't know what it would be. That would be one where we'd probably have to go back to the board and say, okay, well, and he would, probably Campbell would too, because I think that That's the that and that I thought about this last time we talked about this when Campbell was so like we talked about how he was much more comfortable with the idea of losing Ben Johnson than he was with Aaron Glenn last year. And that's because I think that in the like 5 years, the last like 5 years that Campbell was an assistant, when he would think about I'm gonna be a head coach someday, that thought immediately came with and Aaron is gonna be my defensive coordinator. And that's just how it's gonna be, and we're gonna do it together. And I think that's how he's thought about it for a long time. And I'm very curious to see what happens when that has to end, because it will end soon. And I don't think that maybe not this year, but I think sooner than later. I'm very curious to see what Campbell's next step there would be.
Yeah, you'd have to think it's going to be an external hire if Glenn does get a job. Trying to think of like internal candidates. Like I guess for a while it was maybe Aubrey Pleasant. Obviously not anymore. Like Kelvin Shepard, I remember I did a story with him before the season, and I asked him like, "So what's your end goal here?" He's like, "Honestly, I didn't think it was a possibility for me, but I want to be a DC or maybe even a coach if I can get that far one day." And that he said he'd be the one. He did say Glenn has been like getting him more involved in defensive game planning and just taking him under his wing, saying like, "Look, man, like I was in a similar spot to you. You know, I have goals myself." Mm-hmm. And honestly, the funny thing he told me, this funny story, he's like, "I guess Glenn told him, I don't even care if you're like coming for my job, because guess what? If I get fired, I'm getting a new job tomorrow."
That's right. That's why Aaron Glenn is. That's why he is who he is. Like he exudes confidence. Yeah. Continue. Go ahead.
Yep. that was hilarious. I started dying when he said that. My guess would be Shep would be, if they were to go internal, would be the next man up. I just wonder if he has all the experience that he needs for a job like that. I think it's
good point.
Still kind of early. He's only been coaching for a few years, made that transition from player to coach, I believe. And really, I mean, he was looking at some jobs at like Vanderbilt. He ended up taking like an off-field assistant job at LSU in like the 2020 season before coming to the Lions. So really hasn't been coaching on-field that long. So
yeah, it's might really need 2 years. Year
Yeah.
I almost wonder if he would go with AG. You know, that's maybe another one that if when we talk about, you know, guys that left, he likes Campbell a lot too, but
he's got ties to both. So I could see it.
Right. And like you nailed it, because I think that he is a future coordinator, but you would really like him to be around somebody that's a little older, and like Aaron Glenn is older. So like, it's like,
if you're going to be a defensive coordinator,
if he's going to be his defensive coordinator, I think that would work. But it's also a situation where I'm curious if Campbell and AG this year put more on Shepard's plate and say like, well, you know, like kind of what they've done with Ben Johnson, you know, it's like, well, you know, these guys aren't going to be here forever and we'll see, what's up next for you. We know Sean Dion Hamilton is elevated, up the ladder there in a short amount of time. And Tanner. And I could definitely see that happening for Kelvin. I mean, I don't know. And I think that was, when you and I were talking before, it was like, well, he's the only one internally that I think would even get an interview. I don't even know if anybody else would sit down.
Probably not.
But, you know, that would be a tough call. I don't know. We'll see if it ends up happening or not. But, like, those are all things to think about long-term down the road. And I do wonder about if, you know, you have a situation now, because we originally thought maybe that would be Aubrey Pleasant's job down the line. And it's... And that showed us that it's kind of foolish sometimes to be totally presumptuous with that sort of thing. But I think that it's fair to think that Shepard, you know, he played here too. And I think that that's, you know, with the Lions. And I think that that's part of the, he likes it here. They like him, all that sort of thing. I definitely think I could see a path for him to continue elevating here in time, which is a great thing, right? Because shoot, two years ago, that was not a thing. Now you're talking about like, if he leaves, you got a guy that maybe could come in and success. You know, I don't know. It's very interesting how it's happened.
That's what smart organizations do, right?
Like
they kind of keep the pipeline going. They're never really, you know, worried about, you know, the next man up. They have that guy in place, and if that's not the right fit, then they go out and get the right guy. But for a lot of these teams, like the smart thing to do is just like keep building up the pipeline, and I think the Lions have done that pretty well. So if it's a guy like Shepard, you know, we'll see. And maybe a year from now, we'll see if he's ready for that job. But they've done it on the offensive side of the ball too, which, you know, that's kind of what part of these staff restructurings that they announced on Thursday with their new staff. So I mean, it seems like they're kind of building that. They're building that pipeline up. They understand, like, hey, the more success we have as a franchise, as an organization,
right,
the more guys we're going to lose. So we got to start preparing some of these guys.
Yeah, and, it, and the other part of that too is, like, I was just going to say, like, your defensive system changing necessarily isn't as big a deal sometimes as the offensive system, but you know, if you don't have the players, it is, and that becomes the second part of that equation, is that, you know, throughout this rebuild, the Lions have done a good job of not overextending themselves in areas where you don't need to, because you can get by with, you know, younger guys on defense. You can get by. When we say get by, that's it. That's all you can do. You can survive.
That's it.
But you can't go any further. And now they've definitely reached that stage where it's like people want to continue to blame the staff for a lot of stuff. And that's what I was saying earlier, where I think, you know, people around AG get worried that, like, the lack of stats. But hey, look, if he's back, and I, you know, very good chance he's back. I mean, I don't know that he's leaving anywhere. If he's back, you got to give us some players. Like, that's the other part of the equation and conversation, because you do have good coaches here that are going to start getting frustrated if they don't have talent to work with. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, that leads me to the probably the other side of the conversation with the coaches, is that there's still others sort of in transit here at one side of the ball that does have the talent. Deuce Staley. Are we still waiting to see officially on Deuce, Colton? Is the, have the Panthers announced this? Or is that done?
I don't think they've announced it officially yet. So I mean, not the Lions have announced their new running backs coach, so I'm guessing it's like as official as we get without actually announcing
it. And they wouldn't do that, obviously, if Deuce were leaving.
Maybe I just missed the Twitter.
Yeah, but in any event, Deuce moving on, or headed to Carolina to be, I'm not sure. Maybe they were still sort. Maybe that's why. They're still sorting out what his role is going to be. I think coordinator was possible. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't shock me if he's an assistant head coach type situation again there. But also, I believe it was reported that his mom is, that's where his mom's at, right? Is this correct?
His mom, I think, is in South Carolina. And so he
wanted to be close near to the Carolinas. So,
yeah,
I'm not sure if she's ill or not, but, like, obviously she's older and Deuce wants to be near her family, and that's that opportunity. But also, I don't know if play calling, you know, type situation, that wouldn't be on the table here. And I think that if that's something he wants to do. But that brings up the bigger point. And I think that that's a big loss. I think that's a pretty big loss. And it's like people look at that and say, well, it's a running backs coach. And yes, it's the one position other than tight ends, which frankly, that's a little bit more complicated. You're coaching one guy. You're coaching one spot, right? And I think a lot of people look at that and say, well, it's whatever. It's one spot. But that's A, that's wrong. And B, because there's so much more to that than just one spot. And B, like, he was way more than just a position coach here.
Tell him why.
And, you know. And I think that it's the pulse. It's the everything, right? It's the he had the temperature of the entire building. And I think that when we have gotten further back from the beginning of this, the very beginning, I think Deuce Staley deserves as much or more credit than any assistant coach on the staff, because I think that he was the guy, maybe even more than Aaron Glenn, that was like, look, these guys are miserable. The guys that you brought back, the guys that are here from, that were held over, the people that are just around the building. Like, this is a fun, this is supposed to be an enjoyable game. It can't be, like, I think Deuce knows better than anybody. Like, football is a miserable hell if you're not having some kind of fun. If you're not having some sort of enjoyment, if you're not working towards something together. And I think he was the reason that they, you know, Deuce is the guy that put the pool tables in the locker room, put the table tennis, all that crap in there. They have costume contests, all that fun stuff. Like, he's the reason why they all do it. Because he was like, hey, it's okay. You can have fun in here. It's cool. Like, it's okay to like each other and have fun and work together and be a family. And he's gone now. And a lot of people trusted him. A lot of people went to him in times where things were tough. That was the other thing that, you know, guys would go to him when they didn't feel like they could go to Campbell. And that was Deuce's role. They have guys here that can fill that role, but not quite like him. And I think that that's probably the thing that to take away here is that Deuce Staley's being overlooked in a lot of these jobs. And, like, yeah, he's climbing the ladder. I guess we'll see where it goes. But that's another head coach waiting to get a chance to be. He's got those qualities. And I think that that's the thing that I don't think people quite understood when I saw that. When, you know what I mean? Did you get the same sense? Like, I don't think people quite realized the loss there that maybe this is.
I think, I guess the outsider might just watch Deuce from Hard Knocks yelling at Glenn for like 2 hours straight and just being like, oh, well, it's just the running backs coach having a good time,
it's
whatever.
It's performative, like, two people think. It's performative. Yeah, like,
they're just entertaining for TV. That's it. They don't know what they're doing. You know, like, I don't know if that was some of it, but like,
right.
Like, when you really break it down, like you just did, like, he's an important guy in this locker room. Like,
oh, man.
I think Jamal said when he was on Good Morning Football that Deuce is a guy that, like, gives him financial advice to set up for his future. We saw Hard Knocks, the scene of, I think it was, like, before a preseason game. This is where you make your money, guys. Like, this is where we determine who stays, who goes. This is how you get paid in this league. So go out and perform. Like, he kind of puts it all into perspective for people. And I think, again, it's easy to look at him yelling back and forth or doing all this stuff, but like those players really respect him, and you know, he's got the attention of the locker room. And even Campbell, like, we saw Campbell say, like, would be the worst thing if we got rid of like a Craig Reynolds, like, right? And who do you ask that?
He asked Deuce. Yeah, and he was like, you ready to get into a fight with the offensive line?
Exactly.
That's what he told him.
So like, Campbell trusts him. Campbell's like, all right, so what's gonna happen if I get rid of this guy? Because Campbell's thinking big picture, right? That's his job.
Right. Yeah.
He's gotta think about the roster, he's gotta think about little moves here and there. So when he wants a temperature check, he goes to Deuce. He went to a guy like Deuce to give him that. And he's like, all right, cool. Now I know. So that guy's gone now. And, you know, he's not, I don't want to say he's irreplaceable, but it's hard to find another guy like that you trust as much as he trusted Deuce. So they got a new running backs coach now, Scotty Montgomery, has a good background. He's been a head coach himself.
Yes.
I feel like he has more of a wider offensive background in terms of.
He does. You know,
he's been like he's a play caller. He's been an OC before at Maryland. Spent the last couple of years in Indianapolis with the Colts under Frank Reich's staff over there, coaching Jonathan Taylor. So I think that's a good fit. And he took on the assistant head coach title in addition to running backs coach. So maybe that shows that Campbell feels like he can be one of those
absolutely.
Guys too.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of replacing Deuce, they did pretty well there. But again, like, Deuce was already in your system, already knew exactly like what you
everybody
wanted,
knew him.
What you needed from him. Everyone knew him. So it's just going to take some time to kind of rebuild that, I think.
And that was a good hire, because that's Scotty Montgomery's reputation is a lot like, he's a play caller too, but like, he's had that experience. But it's a lot like with Deuce. It's a similar vibe from everything I remember. Loxley had him at Maryland for a minute. They loved him there. I think he was head coach at, was it Tulsa? Somewhere else maybe? I'm not sure where it was.
East
but
Carolina,
he was for a hot sec. East Carolina, that's what it was. For a hot second, but he's really highly thought of as a person. That's another. It made sense to me that was the fit. But I mean, the Deuce part, I don't want to totally leave off on that, because I think that that's a guy that I don't know how you get him there, but I feel like he's a lot like Campbell. I feel like he is a lot like Dan Campbell, and Dan Campbell got hired without play calling experience, right? And that's rare. And he was an assistant head coach with Peyton for however many years it was. But I don't know if Deuce is going to get play calling experience somewhere. I don't know if that's going to work out. But I do think that someone somewhere down the road needs to take a hard look at candidates like him, specifically him, when openings come up. Because, and we'll see how it works in Carolina, right? Maybe this is the thing that he needs to go do and prove. Maybe he needs to prove it, fair or unfair, in multiple places, that he can go into a locker room in Detroit and help them heal themselves, help them play their best ball in ways that doesn't involve just calling, you know, offense. And if he can go to Carolina and do the same thing, maybe you've seen all you need to see. But like, these are candidates in coaching that get overlooked all the time for top jobs, and they shouldn't, because they are the secret sauce. Like, Scotty Montgomery, you said it, he'll get there in time. It'll take, you know, I'm sure it'll take a minute, but like, it's going to take a minute. Like, that's the point. Like, Deuce had it, man. Like, that's why they were able to grind through those games. Like, it's not just one coach. It's not just one person. Like, he was a big deal here. And, you know, I was glad to see that the play calling stuff was on the table for him. I hope it works out, because he's a really good one. And I think that people would be better suited to sort of look at some of those guys. Lions hire him all the time. You know, there was some more we're going to talk about here, but that's Montgomery's, you know, reputation is more about him as a person, I think, than it is as a coach, right? Like, that's their style here.
I think so. And I will say with Deuce, it is sort of a shame that he has to, I don't know if it's a shame, but I mean, the fact that he feels maybe he needs to have that offensive play calling
experience. That's what I was trying to get at. It feels
just to
weird,
get a head job,
right?
Because we've seen what
I feel like he doesn't need it, but you know, it is
he
what
shouldn't
it is.
Need it, but if that's what NFL circles think he needs, I think that's that line of thought thought is a little outdated.
I agree.
The NFL is moving towards guys like Campbell and like Vrabel.
I hope
him
so.
Have success.
I hope so.
It should, in my opinion, but we'll see if it actually gets there. But a guy like Deuce would be a perfect mold for that if it goes that way.
Absolutely.
In due time, we'll see if he gets there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll see if it works out, obviously, one way or the other for him. But you haven't heard the last of Deuce, obviously. We'll see where it goes, but he's a good dude. In any event, a couple of the new guys coming in, though, Colton. We'll talk about some of those as well. Steve Heiden, new tight ends coach, which obviously we'll start with him. That moves Engstrand over to... Well, but what do they call him? Passing game coordinator?
Coordinator, which is a title he already held.
Which is a title he already held.
His sole job now.
But I think that what we sort of talked on this a while ago. That is going to allow him to be the assistant offensive coordinator or whatever you want to call it. For lack of a better phrase, it'll allow him to be Ben Johnson's squire or whatever for the year. And and just be the guy who learns how to learn how to be a coordinator, right? And like, so that you have one ready to go when Ben Johnson moves on, unless Ben Johnson takes him with him on his way out the door. But like, that's, I think, what you're going to have there. And then Steve Heiden, I actually like that hire a ton as well. He is Dan Campbell. He played the game like Dan Campbell. It's the same
career.
They're the same player. So Campbell calls those guys hammerheads, I think, right? Like the guys who get 18 catches a year or whatever it is. And then... you know, they just block. And that told me that that's where they're going and where they're going to stay with the tight ends, right? Like, we talked about that when they traded TJ. You know, it's time to get, you know, these guys to learn how to block and all this sort of thing. Like, that's, they have not had a guy on staff like Steve Heiden. Like, they've had some issues with tight end blocking. And I feel like that's going to be something that he can really maybe help with.
Yeah, just real quick, going back to like how similar they are.
Yeah.
They're both 6'5 tight ends.
Right.
They're both drafted in the third round of the 1999 NFL draft. Heiden was drafted 10 spots ahead of Campbell.
Oh.
They both spent like 10 plus years in the league.
Yeah.
They both became tight end coaches, and now they'll work together in Detroit. So like, that's... Oh,
similar people too. I'm just going
to
guess.
Personality wise too. I mean, you have to. They're probably cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, right.
So I was like, Campbell just hired himself as tight ends coach. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. In terms of like what they've had at the tight ends coach position, like the last couple of years, they've had Ben Johnson, who's not a tight end.
Nope.
And they've had Tanner, who's not a tight end.
Right. Yeah.
So now you get a guy that could probably teach more of the fundamentals and knows the position and can relate to the guys a little bit more. So it's never a bad thing. And in the process, you're able to, you know, get a guy like Tanner closer to Ben Johnson for a year and let him learn and, you know, just, I guess, watch closely, like what he's doing to like get this team on the right track, get the offense going. Like just hopefully take some of those concepts with him before Ben leaves. And again, hopefully you keep Tanner if Ben does leave. I think it's a good situation. I think we were kind of wondering like what this would mean for some guys when they first announced Heiden. But the picture's starting to make sense. Like it feels like this is what they're trying to do with this.
Yeah.
These two spots here.
Like I think they were hopeful that nobody took Engstrand from him. I think they like him a lot. And I think this is a good, I think a lot of staffs do this. You see this now where, and the tight ends coach actually ends up being what they do with it. They stash the guy there because like we just talked about, like you can have your offensive line coach sometimes pitch in with the, you know, you can stash guys. And a lot of guys, this has happened. I think the Rams have done this before. We've seen young coaches come and go and sort of cycle through there with weird jobs. And then they go be a college coordinator. And then suddenly, randomly, a job opens back up on the Rams staff. And, oh, well, how about that? They're back on the Rams. You know what I mean? So I think that there's some of that happening here, which I think is good. And like we talked about that maybe last summer with Engstrand, where it was pretty obvious that he saw the sort of like open rapport that Campbell allows with these coaches. Like Ben Johnson was able to make his moves because I think Campbell was like, anybody that's gotten any ideas, start talking. And he did, and they were better than everybody's. So I think that it's encouraged guys like a Tanner Engstrand to also, you know, speak up, and, you know, it's helped out for him. The other guy coming in here that I wanted to touch on, my favorite hire of the bunch is Dre Bly, who is a Former Lion, as everyone knows, one of my favorite former Lions. I don't think there's too many people that didn't like Dre Bly, the player. Now, Colton, a lot of questions about Dre Bly, the coach, though, as he's coming from North Carolina, and they did not exactly have a great couple years, I guess, with, like, whatever. I don't know. Like, recruiting didn't work. What's the deal with Dre Bly's North Carolina situation, and what do you make of this one?
So I'll be honest. Like, I didn't really understand much of the criticism until I saw you, like, going back and forth with people on Twitter. I was like, what's – are people, like, mad at this hire? Like, you just hired a former Pro Bowl guy who's well-respected.
Who likes to be here.
And knows what it's like to play here. You're not recruiting here, buddy. Like, it doesn't matter. You don't need to have – that's not your job here. Your job is to train these guys up, provide a little insight on your career and what worked for you, and try to get the best out of these guys. Like, that's all you need to do in a cornerback's job at the NFL level. Like,
that's it.
I don't
–
I don't understand
what like, the I don't – like, and now, like, the people who were like, well, he didn't get the most out of his guys or whatever. It's like, first of all, number one, I don't know who set recruiting rankings on any of these things. Those rankings are wrong as much as they're right. That's – I'm not going to even give it credit and say that they're right a lot because they're wrong as much as they're right, okay? That's number one. So I'm not going to sit here and judge anybody on that. Number two – he's not the head coach. He doesn't make decisions on who comes and goes. He doesn't even make decisions on what they teach. Okay? They tell you what to do. Number two, they're kids. Yep. They're 18-year-old kids. Like, teaching someone how to play corner sometimes is like you either can or can't. It's not, there's no teach sometimes involved with at the college level. So teaching college football and teaching pro football are like, you couldn't be any different in this situation. So yeah, I think I was pretty blunt and said I don't give a shit what Dre Bly's cornerback success rate record at North Carolina was because it doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, his job here will be to continue preaching what Aaron Glenn is teaching and then to help these guys with the little things, with the technique and confidence and, you know, little tricks of the trade that, you know, corners are desperate to learn all the time. How many times do we talk to corners where they're like, I love talking to old guys who played the position because nobody knows it better. Well, there you go. Yeah. You got two old guys who played it as well as anybody in man. And this is a perfect hire. I think this is really, really good.
I guess I just don't understand when people became upset about like your background before you came to the Lions as a coach, because that wasn't a thing like a couple years ago.
That's very true.
Where was Mark Brunell coaching before he like joined the staff, right? Like,
high school. It was like, high school.
Yeah. Okay. He was a high school coach for like a year. Kelvin Shepard was at LSU, like off the field.
He was an analyst or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a recruiting analyst or some shit. I think he was doing like recruiting visits.
Like literally, he was not like an on field coach.
No.
Randall L, I don't know what he was doing. I think
he was an assistant receivers coach. Assistant
for a couple years. Okay. So like the experience is there with a lot of these
guys. Glenn was the only guy really that had any experience. Yes. That's a great point.
So we're getting mad at Dre Bly for going to North Carolina for a couple of years and not coaching like an All-American. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah,
like,
whatever. I think the thing to remember with these former players, too, is if you're talking about a guy that played for 12 years, that's basically coaching experience. Like, what are you talking about, right?
You've learned enough to pass some of that along. Yes.
Especially if you're not that far removed, right? Like, I mean, he's not that old. What is Dre Bly? 40? 45? Is he even that old? I don't even know if I might be dating him, but like
he's 45.
Those are the in vogue, I think, hires right now. They're starting to be more and more. And I think that Dan Campbell has started or at least kickstarted some of that trend because they've had some big success here with hiring guys like that. And I bet you we're going to stop here in a second. We want to break. I bet you they've turned guys down. I bet you they've had more phone calls with these openings by double than they've had in any of the previous, you know what I'm saying? Guys wanting to work here, I mean, young guys, hungry guys. Yeah. If you're like 42 and played in the league and want to be a coach, like this is perfect, right? You do this for free here.
That you're probably already on a Campbell list.
You're on a watch list.
Fit that description. Yeah.
You're on the Campbell watch list. And anyway, okay, we're taking a break here. And then we'll come back on the other side and talk a little Senior Bowl and some drafts and whatever else we got going on here. So hang with us. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. We're back. with one of these years talking Lions. A little draft talk. Colton, I was at the Senior Bowl last week. Of course, got sunburned pretty bad. Everyone did, actually. It was a pretty bad weather. Monday or Tuesday was, I think, one of the hottest. Dane was saying it was the hottest day he'd ever been at the Senior Bowl in his however many years he's been going to the Senior Bowl. So it was like 88 degrees and like full sun. Full sun. And so, and you know, in the they have it now at South Alabama in the stadium there, which is a nice stadium. It's all metal bleachers, though. So you're sitting on these metal aluminum bleachers, and that sun was like, it reflected, and it was just like, by like 3 o'clock, I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize it. It was like, it stuck up on me. So in any event, we've recovered.
You didn't bring your Nick Saban.
I had a hat.
You didn't bring your Nick Saban bucket hat.
I did have a hat, but I had short sleeve shirt on. So like my arm, it was bad. It was one of those days where it's like, even the spots where you didn't think you were going to get it, got it. It was like my fingers got sunburned. It was just like, oh my God, it was horrible. Yeah. But in any event, we made it through. We all survived the Senior Bowl, weather permitting, always there. I don't know. You were checking it out, I'm sure. Did you you see anybody that, when you were watching or reading through any of the things that caught your eye? And I've got some sleepers here we can talk about. But anybody that popped to you at all?
I mean, a guy I used to cover, Jaden Reed, I saw clips of him like all week long. And I was like, he must be having a pretty good week down
there. He did have a great week, yes. Yeah.
His separation, like we saw that at Michigan State, but mm-hmm. it seems like he was just kind of, that was a perfect setting for him to kind of show off the quick twitch, the speed a little bit, the ability to create his footwork, all that stuff. Seems like he did make himself some money there, because I didn't know exactly where he'd be drafted. He's a smaller guy,
yeah.
Didn't really have the best production, was kind of injured this last season. Obviously 2021 was a lot more in line with what we come to expect from him, but I was just wondering like how much that would affect his draft stock going to the Senior Bowl. It seems like he kind of alleviated some of those concerns.
Absolutely.
What did you see from like Jaden Reed when you were down there?
He was great. I thought it was a great – he like the Senior Bowl is – it can be a great thing for guys exactly like him. Like, because I thought he was ready to go after 2021, and he came back. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to make any – I don't want to ever say anybody makes a mistake or whatever. You do what you got to do. But he would have been drafted, right? I think he would have been a day two pick. Mm-hmm. And then he comes back, and it's not the year that you want. And, you know, it doesn't work out. The team plays poorly. People forget about you, and you get lost in the shuffle. And, like, that happens. And it happens with scouts. It happens with everyone's human. And so you don't totally forget about the guy, but you sort of do, right? And the guy slips a little bit. It's not like he's not going to get drafted. But you come to something like this, though, and the combine doesn't give you that one-on-one ability to go play against a peer. And he shows up at the, and he dominated. I mean, nobody covered him. Him and Tank Dell were the two receivers that nobody could touch. Jaden separated every single go route. I think he ran in one-on-ones and had no problems with any of that. Of course, those events are sort of made for receivers a little bit too, but he had a great week. The one thing I think that I kept thinking about the whole week for the Lions, actually, other than some of the defensive guys, was like, again, I just keep thinking about these linemen, and I think about, there's a lot of guards and there's a lot of interior guys that a lot of guys, I guess, that could play guard now and then be a tackle down the road, mm-hmm. If you wanted them to be. And there's a lot of options for that I keep thinking about for the Lions. Like, we've talked about that. Yeah. Chris brings that up all the time. Like, would you use a first round pick on a lineman? And probably not. Like, that is my answer on that one. Like, Osiris Torrance, the kid from Florida, is an amazing guard who I think is terrific and absolutely a first-round pick. But I don't think he's a tackle down the road. I don't think he'll ever be a tackle. I think he's just always going to be a guard. So I don't know if I would do that. I don't know if – but when you get further down the list and you start talking about guys like Matthew Bergeron, the kid from Syracuse, who I think
– he's the guy you mentioned.
Who I think could be a tackle right now. But I also think could be a guard right now. And then in 5 years or whatever, whenever Taylor Decker is done or ready to move on or whatever it is, he's your new tackle. And then he moves in opposite Sewell. Sewell can play right or left. I think the kid like this could play right or left. And so it's one of those things where you're talking about, you'd have to take him in the probably the second round. I don't think he's a first round pick, but I wouldn't be shocked if somebody likes him that high. But that's what I'm talking about. Like that extra TJ pick, right? Like that's what kept coming into my head a lot as I was watching the week, because there's a lot of guys This isn't a loaded offensive line draft at the top, but it's deep. And there's a lot of guys in that like day two range that I think could do some things for these guys to turn a good spot to an elite spot and keep it that way for a long time, which is kind of what you're trying to do, right? And I think they're at that spot now where you can start tinkering with some of those things. I don't know. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been getting a lot of, like, whether it's a mailbag question or just, you know, people tweeting at me asking me stuff. Like, it seems like fans want the Lions to go defense with, like, their first five picks.
I don't know,
That's not realistic.
First five.
That's just not how they work.
Let's load it up, damn it.
Yeah. I know. Like, we can knock out our defense with one draft. Like, you can do that. You can fill some spots of agency. You can spend, like, three of your first five picks on defense, but I think we're going to see, like, I'd be shocked if we didn't see, like, some offensive picks in there somewhere.
Yeah, and,
like,
right.
When you're thinking about building a roster, like, you have to think in the moment, obviously, but also, you also have to think long term. So, yeah, the defense might be the big thing that you want to fix this offseason, but that doesn't mean you can't add a guy like Bergeron maybe at, like, 55 in the second round and be like, all right, we got our guard. He can start for us immediately. Or in a couple years, if Decker is no longer a fit here or whatever, you know, like you just mentioned, you push him out the tackle. And, like, I love that. Like, I remember you slacked me and Chris about that. And you're like, you know,
this is
the guy to watch, right? Mm-hmm. That'd be a good plan. Even if you're talking about a guy like Osiris Torrance, if he's only a guard in the NFL, you lose some of that positional flexibility, obviously. So if you're taking a guard in the first round, because that's where you'd have to take him, basically, like at 18 or whatever, unless you trade down. Like, that kind of limits you a little bit. So why not get the guy that can play both in the second round, who might not be as good
immediately,
but he can maybe might
never, and he may never be as good.
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe but, not. Torrance is a good player.
Very good player.
But if you can get the extra versatility, that can make up for it a lot.
100%.
Like you said. So they're going to go offense, guys. Like, they're going to look at some of these spots and look for ways to either – build towards the future or make an immediate impact at a spot. Maybe they take a running back. Like, who knows? But no, I'm with you. Like, if you can find a spot to upgrade like that, keep adding to your strengths. That's one thing that Brad Holmes said when he drafted Penei Sewell. I'm all for it. I think it makes sense.
And I think that's the greatest point is that he, you know, a guy like Bergeron or Cody Maw or some, and maybe not Cody Maw, but some of these other guys, they may never be as good at one spot as someone like Torrance would be. But if I'm the Lions, I don't care because I already have Penei Sewell, who is a generational tackle. I already have Ragnow, who I think is a Pro Bowl, you know, perennial Pro Bowl center. And I already have Jonah Jackson, who I think is, again, same thing. I have three pieces long term. And Decker's here for probably a couple more years. And I think that that's something that I have to remind myself a lot of times. You shouldn't overlook because he's not that old. But you have three really young guys in their 20s. Who are at the top of their game and I think are toward the top of the, if we start stacking players in the league, toward the top of the chart in their own positions. So if I'm taking a younger rookie who maybe is a, I like him as a tackle and I think he can maybe play guard in a pinch and we're going to make that work, I'm going to put him between Sewell and Ragnow and say it's going to be fine because like anybody could probably play between those two guys and it would be okay. Yeah. But if I got a good young player, you know what I mean? Like, and that is the whole concept. And I think Holmes gets that part of it. It's like, you know, this isn't about, you know, I was actually having a little Twitter back and forth with James Edwards there this morning on some Pistons stuff.
Oh, no.
And yeah, my God, his Pistons mentions are hilarious because there's a lot of needs there, right? This isn't about always filling every single need that you perceive as a need. Like, well, it's a need. I heard somebody told me that in the Pistons. Well, they have a need. Well, they don't have any needs. They're like 14 and 70. They're terrible. Everything is a need, right? But to this point, it's like your need is to be good. Your need at this point, if you're the Lions, is to be good, is to take what you're good at and make it great. Like, that's also a need. And they've done a lot of work with that offensive line in the run game to get really good at it and have a really special and kind of a cool thing that could be something great. Now you take the could be and you turn it over. It's not just about Sewell has to go from the best young tackle in the league to one of the best players in the league. It's not just about that. You have to continue to add and continue to stay young. Keep yourself young while you're getting older. That's what the Eagles do. You look at what the Eagles have done with their entire roster. And I get a lot of vibes of that strategy-ish from Holmes and Agnew and these guys. I don't think that would be off the table to look at a piece that's already on the outside, looks like it's stable, but there's more to it when you look at it, when you peel it back and you could see the long term. And I think that this is the type of draft with the assets they've gathered, if they want to do that, that that's possible for sure. We'll see, though, because you could also trade. And we've got some questions here, too, because you could also trade. And that's the other thing. You could do a lot of trading if you're the Lions. They have a lot of picks. There's a lot they could do. You did a mailbag this week, Colton. It's up right now on the site. You can answer all these questions. We're going to go through a couple of these here. Yeah. First one was from Daryl. What are your thoughts and the likelihood of trading up from 6 to try to get Will Anderson or Jalen Carter? And I got that question a lot, actually, after I did my mock draft 2 weeks ago, because I had, in that one, I had the Raiders trading up. I had the Bears just sitting and taking Carter at 1, based on the thought that maybe they like him, and maybe Bryce Young isn't the quarterback that people are willing to just trade their whole draft for. Maybe that's not the case here. So in that scenario, the 2 was open. And so, sure, like that's, you know, why can't they do that? Why wouldn't that be out of the question? And I don't think it's out of the question was my answer to whoever asked me that. And I didn't read your entire statement here, but like, I don't think that's out of the question. It would now a lot would have to happen. Right. And it's like, I don't know if I would do that, but like we've seen proof of the aggressive nature if they love a guy. So we'll see. But I don't think that's out of the question.
Right. In that section, I wrote that you do have the extra capital from the Hockenson trade. Mm-hmm. We've seen Holmes go up to get a guy that he wants. Like there's proof of that. There's history behind it. I guess for me, the question is like, what does the board look like at that point?
Right.
I think I wrote it's more likely that you could probably trade up to 3, like with the Cardinals, because they don't need a quarterback.
That's
like,
actually what I was thinking. 3, not 2. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. 3. Because the Texans will probably just stand pat and take a quarterback. The Colts at 4. Seahawks will probably try to get like Anderson or Carter if they fall, unless they just really like one of these quarterbacks, which I don't think, because they like Geno too. So I actually think the Cardinals at 3 makes some sense if you can give them an enticing enough package.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that expensive either.
Right, because they've got some needs too. They need to fill some holes too. New coach too probably might want some more draft assets. So trade down from 3 to 6. Maybe the Lions throw like 55 and 6 for number 3. I don't know. Maybe that gets it done.
I think that would probably do it. Yeah, that's not that bad. Yeah, right. If you're talking about Will Anderson or something, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Basically trading Hockenson, like that's like the pick you would get from Hockenson trade. You just throw that in there for a Will Anderson or
I'll take
Carter.
That.
Yeah. So the way that would work is if like, okay, the Bears trade down to someone. Let's say the Colts move up to 1. The Bears trade down to 4. Colts take their quarterback. Texans take their quarterback at 2. Now all of a sudden you're at 3. You can take your pick, Carter or Anderson. So I think that's probably the move. And you also stop the Bears from getting their guy.
Right.
One or the other.
But also, the greater point there, I guess, from Daryl is he said he's just not excited about any of the defenders after those two guys. And that's really accurate. Well, I mean, it's accurate, though. The drop-off is real. The cliff, the edge after, because we're talking about Carter and Will Anderson are two, you know, generational type potentially defensive prospects. There's not anybody else, I don't think, in this class that we would say is that. And it gets actually kind of difficult where you're like, is there another defender in this class that's top 10?
Who's the third best defensive prospect in this class?
Right. That's the big question. And I go back and forth a lot on that. And sometimes some days I end up on Brian Branch, the kid from Alabama, the safety. Who I don't know if I would draft him at 6. Like, are you going to do that? And I, you know what I mean? Like, but I do think Brian Branch.
Can I tell you something?
What'd you say?
Branch?
Yeah.
When I was on vacation, aka like a week of doing nothing.
Yeah, right.
I was doing a lot of mock drafts. so much to a point where they, because I'm a sicko, so much to a point where they were bleeding over to my dreams.
Oh, God.
All right. So I almost slacked you and Chris this. I almost did it. But I'll say it right here. I went to bed. I had a dream where I was at 6. The Titans wanted to trade up to get like an offensive lineman. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll trade back. And I picked up like an extra second or maybe a future first. I don't even know what got it done. But I traded down to 11.
11, yeah.
And I drafted Brad. Or I don't even know if this was me. I think I was just like along for the ride. And Brad Holmes did this. And he drafted Brian Branch at number 11.
You're watching it.
And I almost slacked you guys. I'm like, if Holmes does this. And I'm saying this right now. If Holmes drafts Branch and trades down to 11, that exact same scenario.
That's pretty good.
I'm buying a lottery ticket. I don't know. I'm going to quit my job and
yeah,
just find about a way to make some money or something.
That would work, wouldn't it?
But
that would work.
I think it would, man. Yeah, Branch
is a good player. If you can move off of there, move off. That's what I think that's the end all. Like Chris and I talked about that. I think it was actually the week that you were off. So you're probably dreaming about your draft. Like if you can move back.
That was a weird week.
You move back. And
yeah.
When you just look at it without the chaos factor and just like, okay, well, here's how we think it's going to go, right? Like, we think the quarterbacks are going to go, blah, 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 bang, bang. And then those two guys will be gone. And then at six, it'll be this cliff. And then you'll be screwed. Like that, you know, that's the, and it's possible that that happens. But it's also very possible that that doesn't happen. And it's also possible that, you know, in a month after Anthony Richardson's pro day, he is a top five draft pick, whether you people agree with it or not. Like, that's very possible. Like,
more
a
likely
lot,
than not.
Yeah, a lot of things could happen here in this top five that are unforeseen, and it happens every year. Like, so all it takes, if you're at six, is one thing to go weird. And one of those guys falls down. And then suddenly you're talking about putting Will Anderson opposite Aiden Hutchinson or Jalen Carter next to Aiden Hutchinson. And now we're talking, okay? Now Aaron Glenn's like, maybe I'll hang around for a couple of years. Like, that's all that it takes. And so, yeah, it's the likelihood of trading up, I don't know how likely it would be. It's certainly possible. But I think that the more likely scenario of the two would be that some weird stuff happens and one of those guys falls, because I don't think that that's totally out of the question, but I also don't think it's out of the question that those guys might, that's, I mean, because you said earlier that Houston, I'm not totally convinced they take a quarterback. I'm not totally convinced that this isn't just the Bears can't find exactly what they want. For one, screw it, we're taking Jalen Carter because he's awesome, or Will Anderson because he's awesome. And the Texans, same thing. We have Davis Mills. We have 1,000 draft picks. We are going to suck this year, and we're going to be up here next year with some of the best, with better quarterbacks at the top. We're taking Will Anderson or Carter. Let the rest of you guys sort out the quarterbacks. That could be what happens here, and that changes everything, of course, right? So I think there's a lot of things that people aren't looking at.
Well, if they go defense with the first pick, they've got number 12 and 33.
Yeah.
They could probably trade back up for a quarterback.
If they want to, the right.
Like, if they want to trade with the Lions and offer like 12 and 33 for six, I would do that. I don't know about
that. There's
you,
a billion things the Texans could do. And like, we don't even know what they're...
Like, what if Stroud is there at
And they actually and, like, have a young quarterback who isn't the worst thing. He's not good, but he's not the... He's not a... Yeah, but he's not like... You're going to suck anyway. Like, the team isn't going to be good. Yeah. So what's the point? Why bring in...
He could be like your Andy Dalton or...
Right,
like
whatever.
You treat him like that.
Like, he's here for it. If you have to ruin his psyche, who cares? Like, if it... I mean, not to be callous, but like... I mean, if you're talking about that, or like C.J. Stroud having to like lead a team that's like struggling, and maybe it's not good for him because he's got a lot of pressure on him. Davis, no, man. Like, he's just... Go out there and sling it, kid. We'll see what happens. I wouldn't hate that if I'm the Texans. If it means I can get Jalen Carter and I don't have to mess with the quarterbacks, and I can take Jalen Carter at six, and then I take a lineman at you know, what's the next one? Nine or some shit like that. And then I take another lineman and I start building my team. And then next year, if I'm the Texans, I'm still picking in the top five and I have 1,000 more picks. Because they do.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of things that could happen in the top three that people aren't necessarily looking at. Yeah. And some of the panic about, it's not panic yet, about you're going to be stuck with nothing. It's warranted, but it's also like, you got to look at the full, you really do have to remember, because it's easy to get lost in the sauce with the mock drafts, as Colton found last week.
Yes.
That other things can happen that you're not necessarily, you know what I mean? Sort of looking for
PFF is like rotting the minds of people.
they do a good job with it. Yeah, we need to. Hey, look, if anybody at the
it's athletic, fun. It's like addicting. I'm not like shitting on it. It's like addicting. It's like I do it like every day. I can't get away from it.
Wheels. I don't know how fast these wheels are, how big these wheels are, but wheels are in motion on the draft team to get an athletic mock draft simulator built.
That would be incredible.
Now, Chris and I have talked about it. Dane has talked about it. We have talked about it together. If there's someone that knows how to do that at the Athletic that has enough time, that's another conversation for another day. That'd be awesome. That has been something.
Dane's big board.
That's what I say. I'm like, why are we not doing this? Yeah, but in any event, another one from Kevin here. We'll take a couple more and then we'll get out of here. What are your thoughts and analytics behind trading back in the draft? Trading back. Yeah, I mean, again, like I think that there is a case to be made for them to do a lot of things here. And I think that that's what this, they have the flexibility to trade up or back. I would trade back. Yeah. I mean, I would be open for it, but I would also, it wouldn't be something that I would necessarily be seeking out this time because I think you have two first round picks. Like, I mean, how much more do you, like how many more do you need? I guess to a degree, if the deal is
greedy,
if the deal is like something that you can't pass up though. And that's the point. Like that's the, not to totally go back to the Eagles thing all the time, but that's kind of what they've done, you know, where it's like, we're not trying to trade back. If all things are equal, we'll just sit here at whatever and take a good player. But if somebody's desperate, yes, we're going to take advantage of them being desperate. And I think that's the analytics or the, whatever the notion or the logic behind trading back. If someone is so desperate that they're going to give you something that's stupid. Yeah. You do it. Like that's what I think the position for trading back would be. Otherwise I would probably be more focused on sticking and picking.
What was the Justin Fields haul that the Giants got when they traded with the Bears so they can go up and get him?
I'm not sure.
They got like it was like their own pick that year in the first round, and the Bears traded their first round pick the following year, I think, and maybe something else. You can get a package like that. Let me look it up.
Yeah, it was. It might not have been that much. But like, even if it's, but like, maybe it was, I don't know. Maybe it was because they did have to go up quite a bit. You're right. So like, exactly. Maybe if it's a team like that, that's like out of nowhere, like if Washington says, screw it, we're sick and tired of being in quarterback hell. Like, we're going to go and just be nuts here and go get a guy. Like, yeah, I mean, that's, if that happens, then that's, you know, that's the dream scenario. But like, they're not impossible.
So the Bears sent pick number 20 and a fifth rounder, in addition to a 2022 first and a 2022 fourth.
Two firsts, a fourth, and a fifth. 11. Okay. Yeah.
Just for 11. So they moved up 9 spots to get their guy. So I don't know how far you'd be willing to go back. If you're the Lions, if you go back from like 6 to, I don't know, what team needs like a quarterback in range? Like
Washington. Well, a lot of them.
Washington at
Raiders,
16. Yeah.
You need, the Lions need Richardson, Anthony Richardson, to load it up have a damn spring. That's what they need.
So you listen to that, guys? All you guys that have been like shitting on Anthony Richardson, you should be his biggest fan.
You need to get on the AR-15. Well, he doesn't go by AR-15 anymore. You need to get on the Anthony Richardson bandwagon. Get the pro day DVR'd and get ready, because I'm telling you, the higher that guy goes, if this becomes a four-man quarterback situation,
drive up a bidding war.
Yes. Because if we're all sitting here saying, well, Young and Stroud are top 5 picks, or they could be top 10 picks, worth trading up for. If teams are going to convince themselves that Will Levis is worth trading up for, and I think that there's going to be some that are, you're damn right. There's going to be some teams that are convinced Anthony Richardson, you need that thing to keep cranking. Like that would be the best possible scenario for the Lions. Not just to draft him or whatever. I'm not talking about that. Just somebody else needs him. Somebody else is desperate. Somebody else is like, we'll give you everything we got. Like that's, and they're up there without, them and Seattle are the two up there without any needs that are that pressing based on this board right now.
If you can get to a point where, like, let's say you trade down no further than, like, 16, and you can still get one of those corners with your first pick.
You could even go further, I think.
You can probably.
And get a good corner.
But let's say you get one of those corners, like, middle of the first round. You add if you're trading down that low, you'd probably be getting a first-round pick in 2024.
Oh, yeah.
So you're adding that you can, you're just kicking the can down the road a little bit, and you're adding more assets for next year. You can make a move next year if there's a guy you really like.
Yeah.
With your own picks by that at that point, you probably pick up a middle round pick too if you're doing a trade like that. So now you're helping yourself in 2023. You're helping yourself in 2024. Keeping the future focus there, like we've talked about. So I would not be opposed to that at all. You can still get a cornerback. You can still go best player available at like 18 at that point too, if someone falls. So
these assets, these picks are assets. They're not, a first round pick is not necessarily even one player, right? It doesn't necessarily just mean one guy. It's an asset, and it's a future asset that is highly, highly valuable. Especially these flex ones that they've had over the, like the Rams one now, you look at this thing, it's six. Like, you know what I mean? It was 32 last year. Well, now it's six. Like, you know what I mean? It worked out. Like, these are valuable assets that you don't know what they're going to be, you know, in time. And I think that the greatest thing about, being on schedule, because I still don't think they're ahead of schedule, I think they're on schedule, is that you have the flexibility to now put yourself ahead of schedule and stay there. Like, that's the biggest thing. It's not about, we want to just get to the playoffs and win a playoff game, and then that's it. And then to hell with it. Like, and then then everything goes to, you know, we mortgage everything to just get to that, and then we'll, whatever. No! Like, it's about getting yourself fixed and staying fixed. That's what is
staying fixed.
Yeah. That is what has eluded the Detroit Lions for 75 fucking years. Getting yourself fixed. They've been fixed before. They've had good teams.
They put bandages on.
They've had very good teams, Hall of Fame players, but they've never, ever, ever had anyone that's capable or had the foresight or actually had the time, probably in some cases, to get them to that point of staying fixed, staying healthy. Like, that's. That, I think, is the opportunity they have here in this draft, is to really, really take another step into just stamping the health of your franchise for beyond just the here and now. Because that's really the elusive thing that all the teams in the league are trying to get to, right? Like, that's what draft capital is all about. That's what that's how the Ravens do it. That's how the Seahawks do it. That's how, you know, the Eagles, again, the Steelers. I mean, look at them. They're never bad. They're never bad. What's that stat about Tomlin? That he's had, like,
he's never had a losing record. That's
like,
insane.
Look, and I think Mike Tomlin's awesome. I think Mike Tomlin's one of the best football coaches in football. Okay, I don't want to take anything away from him. But the reason why he's never had a losing record is because they draft as well as anyone in the league. Period. End of story. He'd be the first one to tell you that. Like, that's what it is. Yeah. That's the opportunity that I feel like they have here. So I think that I think there's a lot on the. A lot of possibilities. And if I were Detroit, I guess my biggest thing is, like, I would just sort of sit there and, for a change, let other people freak out and panic and try to play their situation for your own benefit. You're finally in a situation maybe where that can happen. That's kind of exciting to me. Like, that more so than in the previous 2 years where it was like, you can't leave Friday without X, Y, and Z. If they do that, it's a fucking disaster. No, that's not what this is. It's a lot of things, a lot of ways this could go in these first 2 days where it would be a win. And I don't even know what all those reasons, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios. And I think that, you know, it'd be fun to go into all of them here. But got anything else today before we run out here?
No, I mean, I guess the more we talk about this, it's like the Lions can do whatever they want.
They really could. They're in a great spot.
Whatever they want. I don't know how many times you could say that in the past, because there were so many needs.
This is as good a spot. They still got
to plug some holes, but
this is as good a draft situation that I can remember. Really, I mean, in the last 15 years, you know, I mean, going back further, I guess maybe there's been some somewhere in there that I'm not thinking of, but I mean, based on where the team is at, where the staff is at, your faith in the general manager and his scouting department, all those things, and I'm not even talking about the fact that they have all these assets. Like, that alone would be enough to be.
That's a good spot alone. Yes.
Right. Even if you had, like, if you had an idiot GM that you didn't trust, if you had an idiot coach that you didn't trust, you'd still be like, well, this could be a good offseason, right? We could accidentally have a good draft. But you do have a GM that you trust, you do have a coach that you trust, and you have all that. So, I think every time we end up talking about this, you end up with the same result, right? Where it's like, you can nitpick about things, but man, they are in a really good spot to really do a lot of good things this year in the off season here.
Yeah.
Not just the draft, free agency, the whole shot, but you know, I guess we'll see how it goes.
Right. I would just say keep the focus on that.
Yeah.
They are in a good spot. They can do whatever they want. They can trade up, they can trade down.
And a lot of things.
Whoever they get, I think we'll see that they're going to come away with some starter quality players.
Yeah.
And that's all you can ask for in a draft like this and when the position that they're in right now.
Yeah.
So they're going to have this point. Team. And yeah.
That's the best point is that I do think that, and Chris and I have talked about this, and you and I have talked about this, the Holmes, I think, has earned a little bit of trust.
Yes.
From the fans that you're not going to draft an idiot. Or whatever, they're not going to draft just a terrible player that's just not going to do. If it doesn't work, you know, whatever. Maybe it's like a guy got hurt or didn't quite, but it's not going to be, what are you doing? Like, what is this? Like, what the hell is happening? Like, I think that we can probably go out on a limb and say that you can trust him a little bit, that's not coming. And I think that with Lions fans, that's usually the biggest bridge to cross, where it's like, you're not going to screw us, are you? And draft a friggin' like holder in the second round or something like that.
Punter.
Like,
yeah.
In any event, okay, that's good for this week, I think. I think we'll try to keep this. We're trying to keep this week to week, at least through the draft. We'll try to stick on that and see what else is going on. Maybe next week we'll have more clarity on the coaching staff. But in any event, I think that's good for this week. Colton, you good?
I'm good. Yep.
All right. That sounds good. Thanks for listening. As always, be sure to subscribe both to The Athletic and to the show. That'll do it for this week. For Colton, I'm Nick. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you later.